Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Paul Brown. He's a former U.S. congressman. He's also a medical doctor, and he has a quite perspective on Obamacare and attempts to repeal Obamacare. And we're going to get into that in just a moment right now on Vocal Point. But first, Dr. Brown, if you don't mind, since the ultimate founder of this radio station is Dr. D. James Kennedy, and off the air, you've told me some of the things about what Dr. Kennedy has meant to you. I find it very touching, and if you don't mind, I'd like you to share it with our listeners.
Certainly, I'd be glad to. In fact, Dr. Kennedy did mean a lot to me. His preaching and his teaching from the pulpit every Sunday was just to help build me up, because I certainly understood what I believe in greater. Because, say, I'm an original intent constitutionalist. I believe in the founding principles of our nation. And that's what Dr. Kennedy taught. In Hosea 4:6, God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And we don't hear from the pulpits every Sunday across this country about this nation and how much we're losing the foundational principles that were based on God's inerrant word. And that's what Dr. Kennedy promoted. That's what he taught. In fact, I had an opportunity at one time to talk with him personally.
Oh, wow.
But then he also meant a lot to me for my family. My dad was a state senator for 38 years. He was the son of a minister.
Georgia, for the state of Georgia.
My dad was counting upon, what's that?
The state of Georgia.
In the state of Georgia.
Okay.
And he did a lot of very wonderful things for the people of the state of Georgia. And he was counting on all those good works to make him right with a holy and righteous God. And as I know, once I got saved, when I was in my mid-40s, when I accepted Jesus Christ personally as Lord and Savior.
Wow.
I kept trying to witness to my dad. He had a lot of people praying for him as well, who knew him politically, people who do know Jesus personally, and they knew that my dad just needed Jesus personally. And when the Lord moved us from Southwest Georgia to Northeast Georgia, where we now live, my wife, Nikki, would go over and witness to him and visit with him. And she was going through a Bible study that she had, that's through Christian Women's Club, actually, I think is where that Bible study came to. And she came to a point where in that Bible study, it assumes an individual had accepted Jesus as Lord. And so she just mentioned that to my dad that, well, you know, you just never have. And he says who? And what I did not have any clue about what was going on there. And she called me up and said, all right. I'm getting emotional every time I tell this story.
Sure.
But she told my dad, she told me to go see my dad, and I walked in, and he said that my wife wanted him to tell me that he accepted Jesus.
Wow.
As Lord. And his whole life changed, and his demeanor changed. He was living in a personal care home. On Sundays, they had a Sunday brunch, and he would sit with his buddies, and they would talk about things for hours at the brunch table. Well, after he accepted Jesus, he would leave the table, and he would rush to his room just to watch Dr. Kennedy and his teaching about public policy, and it was just a phenomenal
Wow.
change in my dad's life. And this was 2 years before he died at age 89.
Wow.
So Dr. Kennedy's teaching was very important to me, but it's very important to my dad before he died. And it really was a reflection of a changed life that comes when somebody hears the truth.
Yeah.
And understands that they need Jesus as Lord and Savior. And so I'm looking forward to meeting Dr. Kennedy face-to-face when I go to be with my Lord when I leave this world.
Wow. So, in other words, outwardly, your family embraced Christianity, outwardly, but you personally got saved in your 40s, and then right. when you tried to tell your dad to get saved or whatever, he was offended by it. But later in life, he came to accept it. And then in the meantime, the television broadcasts of D. James Kennedy, which, by the way, is my full-time employer. So right. it's fascinating for me to hear all this. I work as the senior producer and on-air host for D. James Kennedy Ministries. So it's primarily our television program. So I'm very delighted to hear this. That's wonderful. And you say that... Dr. Kennedy also had input in your own personal ministry. Now, you were a U.S. congressman for what, how many years about?
I was in the U.S. House of Representatives for four terms. I won a special election in 2007 and served till my fourth term ran out. I ran for the U.S. Senate in Georgia. Felt very called by the Lord to do so, but I was unsuccessful in the Republican primary in 2014. So when my term ran out in January 3rd of 2015, I was no longer in Congress. My calling all along comes from a question that God asked in Psalm 11:3, and the question is, if the foundations be destroyed, what are the righteous to do? And I believe it's actually a call, Dr. Mnookin, for every Christian to look at the foundational principles, not only of the family, but also of government. And unfortunately, most pastors don't preach like Dr. Kennedy did to talk about those foundational principles. Our founding fathers believe very, very firmly that every aspect of life, including public policy and politics, should be directed by God's inerrant word, the Holy Bible. And I believe the same thing. In fact, when I was in Congress, I had four questions that I utilized to evaluate all legislation. And the first one was, is it right? We only have one standard of what's right and what's wrong, and that's what our Creator says. So is it biblically correct? Does it fit the Judeo-Christian biblical principles our nation was founded upon? The second question, was it constitutional according to the original intent? Is it one of the enumerated powers from Congress? There are only 18 issues that Congress can officially vote on constitutionally. Those are the 18 things in Article 1, Section 8. And my other two questions were, do we need it and can we afford it? If all four were yes, I'd vote yes. If one was no, I'd vote no. And just recently in the news, we've been hearing about this health care bill. I would vote no because it actually fails all four of those questions.
Wait, when you say this health care bill, are you talking about now the brand new one where they're trying to repeal Obamacare and replace it? Or are you talking about the original one or all of the above?
The bill that Paul Ryan pushed through the U.S. House of Representatives is not constitutional. It's not a repeal of Obamacare. All it does is reform it, and it amends the Obamacare law. All the bills that Mitch McConnell had in the Senate do the very same thing. Both the House bills and the Senate bill, none of them would repeal Obamacare. And it actually would break the promises that Republicans have been making to repeal and replace Obamacare, that promise that they've been making. Every Republican in this country running for federal office has been promising to repeal Obamacare since 2010. Those bills all break that promise. So I couldn't support them. In fact, all those bills would continue to lead us toward a single-payer system. The Democrats talk about having Medicare for all, but that's not where we're headed if we don't repeal Obamacare and replace it with something such as my bill that we talked about the last time I was running the program, the Option Act. All of them are going to lead to socialized medicine, a government-run health care system, VA care for all, not Medicare for all, but VA care for all, and worse than VA care that we see today.
Wow.
So I couldn't support it.
Yeah. What about free enterprise? I mean, wouldn't that be nice to have free enterprise when it comes to our medical health care system?
Well, that's what I promoted in my bill. And in fact, my bill is the only Republican bill that would truly put doctors and patients in charge of making all the health care decisions. You see, the problem that we have today Dr. Newcomb, with the high cost of insurance and the high cost of all goods and services in the healthcare system is because of the federal government being involved in healthcare, putting mandates on the system, putting mandates on the not only on the providers, but even on patients and the patient care that they get. And it doesn't matter whether they're under a government healthcare insurance program such as Medicare or Medicaid or CHIP, Child Health Insurance Program, or whether they're private insurer patients, they still all the policy is dictated by the federal government. And you have all these mandates. I'll just give you an example of one mandate.
Sure.
I'm a family practitioner, a general practitioner. At one time, I was involved in an office where we had, I think, 11 providers in 5 different offices in the Athens, Georgia area. We looked at trying to put in electronic medical records. We could not afford it. There was no way for us to buy an electronic medical record system. So I just dictated my charts, and we had them transcribed and put in the paper charts, and we had racks in the office to do that. Well, George W. Bush and his administration mandated, if you take Medicare, that you have electronic medical records. I looked as a solo practitioner at buying electronic medical records for my practice. Again, I couldn't afford it. But it's been mandated, if you take the government insurance, that you have to put in an electronic medical record system. So you have this huge cost forced upon providers. Well, who pays for that? Well, it's paid for by passing those costs along to some other entity. You've had a lot of doctors sell out their practices and go to the work for a hospital, and the hospital owns medical practices, and that actually, those mandates, not only electronic medical records, but other mandates, take physicians' time away from seeing patients, and so they give less quality care. They can't see as many patients, and it costs much, much more.
Wow.
For the services delivered. And that's just a couple of small examples of how government mandates and government setting policy affects everybody in this country and makes health insurance unaffordable.
Hmm. Well, you know, a friend,
and you're right. Going to the marketplace is the way to take care of that. And the only thing that's going to lower the cost of premiums long term, and the only thing that's going to make all healthcare goods and services much lower than they are today, is to take the mandates, the policy setting away from the federal government, and the price setting that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services do on Medicare patients, because that's just the private insurers just follow what the government sets up as policy. The only way to do that is to have an open, free marketplace, a free marketplace unencumbered by government taxes and regulations, is the best way to control quality, quantity, cost of all goods and services, whether it's health care or buying automobiles or anything. We've got to open up the marketplace, and that's what my Patient Option Act did, and that's what we need to do for all goods and services in this country to lower them. The thing is, the government mandates actually hurt the people that they say that they represent most, and the Democrats say they represent most, and that's poor people and senior citizens on limited incomes. They're the people who are hurt most by the mandates and policy setting, not only in health care, but energy policies and everything else.
Wow. Well, we're basically out of time, but listening to you reminds me of the old statement from Ronald Reagan where he said some of the scariest words you'll ever hear is, "I'm from the government, and I'm here to help." Dr. Paul Brown, thank you so much for being with us again on Vocal Point. God bless you. Appreciate it, sir.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.